We are going to now be doing a four-week workshop, I believe called Emotional Sobriety. If you haven't heard Karen before, you're in for a treat. If you had, you're still in for a treat.
Oh, thanks,
Mike. I've heard her do some workshop stuff. It's fantastic. Her home group is Wednesday nights in Livingston. I've already forgotten the name of it, but it's a strong group with a strong fellowship. Definitely check it out. And with that, I'm going to step away and turn it over to Karen C.
Thank you so much. Good evening, family. My name's Karen. I'm an alcoholic. My sobriety date is September 6, 1989. I have a sponsor. She is a sponsor. I have a home group. It's called Journey to Freedom. And we meet on Wednesday nights in Livingston at 7:30. Love to have you. It's an open meeting. So I'll bring anybody. We bring in speakers. We go through the book. A different speaker every week. And it is just really a cool group to be part of. So when I was asked to come and speak here. I love Wes. Thank you so much for inviting me. Dave and I were talking, and he said, I really want you to do emotional sobriety. And I'm like, okay, so just a little bit of disclosure. Anything I'm saying is from the literature of Alcoholics Anonymous. The literature comes from the letters that Bill wrote. It comes from As Bill Sees It. It comes from the 12 and 12. And the main source of information, of course, comes from the big book, Alcoholics Anonymous. So to introduce this little bit of a workshop of a study that we're going to be doing together, it is a new perspective. 12 steps are, in essence, a group of principles. They're spiritual in nature. We sometimes forget that. Which, if practiced as a way of life, it tells us, can expel the obsession to drink and enable the sufferer to become happily and usefully whole. Like, who wouldn't want that? Right now, it's kind of hard to be grounded in that thought. But I can tell you that when I was introduced to this concept of emotional sobriety, I was at a jumping off place in my recovery. I was 12 years sober. And I was holding on to secrets that my sponsor didn't know. I didn't even really realize they were secrets, to be quite honest. It takes a while to let honesty grow in your heart and in your soul and in these rooms. And it takes a while away from a drink or a drug in order to do that. And that is my experience. And I had, I'd gone to a place, I had some real life issues come one-on-one, you know, that were just like mind-blowing. I was in the battered women's shelter and got out of the battered women's shelter. I knew I had to leave this abusive marriage I was in, and I was terrified. I was hanging on to sex and checks, that's what I'll call it. I couldn't let go, and I was in trouble, and I knew I was in trouble. And I didn't really have that solid step two that's going to tell me that God has my back, no matter what. The belief that no matter what's going to happen, I'd be all right. And at the same time, a flyer crossed me at a meeting, and I went down to Georgia, and I met my sponsors, Polly and Michael. And I was just about ready to get onto a carpet ride I didn't even know I needed. And I was being given a gift that was extraordinarily beyond my belief. And Polly introduced me to this article Bill Wilson wrote, A New Perspective, A New Frontier, Emotional Sobriety. And in there, in this, and I have a couple of copies. I didn't bring a lot, but I promise you next week I'll be more prepared. There's a statement that it makes in here that if we examine any disturbance, great or small, we find it has its root in some dependency. An unhealthy dependency. And it says, if we examine every disturbance we have, great or small, we'll find at its root of it an unhealthy dependency and its consequent unhealthy demand. And then Polly and Michael proceeded to take me through the steps of Alcoholics Anonymous from the perspective of emotional sobriety. And with that work, I ended up seeking information, and it turned into a workshop. Basically is what happened. And I'm here to share this with you. As he said in here, as Bill said in here, let us with God's help continually surrender these hobbling demands I didn't even know I really had, so we can be set free to live in love. Because the whole deal here is separation from the power and connection to the power. And this got me connected to the power. So we're also told that unless every AA member follows to the best of their ability the suggested 12 steps of recovery, he signs his own death warrant. It's pretty powerful words, don't you think? Uh-huh. Pretty powerful, right? His drunkenness and dissolution are not penalties, it says, inflicted by people in authority. They result from personal disobedience to spiritual principles. How about that? And I didn't even understand. Well, what does that have to do with anything anyway? I'm a good person. You know, and I began to grow in understanding the steps from a different perspective. So that's what we're going to share today. So in each step, and today we'll go through steps 1, 2, and 3. And we'll study what is the step addressing, right? What's the problem the step is addressing? What's the solution? In every step that is presented to us in our work here in the 12 and 12, there's a prayer. And it's found in the book. And I'm going to help you find that in the book as I found it in the book. And what's the principles to practice for that step? What's the promise you're going to experience being involved with that step? As we're trying to take, well, you take the steps off the wall, we're trying to develop a design for living. This is what helped me form that design for living. And what's the new practice that we can try while working this step? So I have a new acronym for you for alcoholism. It's a life centered on helping others, living in spiritual mindfulness. Got it? So early in sobriety, I was told all you need to do is take action. Well, that wasn't enough for me. I took action. I was doing all the things they told me to do. I was leading meetings. I was leading retreats. I was sponsoring people. I was going to the 4 assigned meetings a week. I was showing up at a speaking commitment. But inside, there was a rumble. There was a rumble, and I just couldn't get connected to what was really going on for me. So I didn't pick up a drink. I have been sober since the day I entered my first meeting on September 6, 1989. I didn't pick up a drink. I didn't pick up a drug. Though I was relieved of the obsession really early. I had a near white light experience kind of thing. I knew helping others made me feel better. I show up. I do whatever my sponsor said, mainly because I didn't want to get fired at first. You know? And another reason was I didn't want he wasn't exed then, he is now. I didn't want him to take my kids or report me to DIFAS. I did not want to lose my children. So I knew I had to get a grip. But I had no idea what that grip looked like. And I was doing that deal. So as I was taking a closer look at these 12 steps, I realized in this working with my sponsors that they're designed to connect me. Each one of them, each line in this big book, designed to connect me with the power in a new and different way. And at least half of these steps talk about that spiritual connection in a way that you haven't seen before. So I also love the St. Francis Prayer. I was introduced to it very, very, very early. And that St. Francis Prayer is asking me to do something that's totally uncomfortable. It's asking me to think of you first. It's asking me, the whole program is asking me to do something that is just so not natural for an alcoholic. I get who I am. I get who I am totally. Selfish and self-centered is the root of my troubles. And I'm driven to support that. Just imagine, though, if you're driven by spiritual principles, what your life could look like. And that was what I was questioned when I met Polly and Michael. When I met them, they began to question me. Imagine your life driven differently. Imagine that frothy emotional appeal line in the book where it says, the message that can interest and hold alcoholic people must have depth and weight. I don't have any other initials after my name, but I do have depth and weight to my message to you because it comes from God, and I know that, right? Okay, so let's turn the next sentence into a promise. If my ideals are grounded in a power greater than myself, I get to recreate my life. So would you like to recreate your life? Because that's what these steps are going to do for you. Okay, so step one. I call step one a gift of powerlessness. Now, if you're new here, you might say, a gift? This is really a gift? So let's talk about what that really means. So the we admitted we're powerless over alcohol and our lives have become unmanageable. We admitted that. So who's the we? The we is me and my 12-stepper. Whoever 12-stepped you in here, whoever got you here, whatever prayer led you here, whatever power greater than you got you here, it starts out with you and that 12-stepper, that we. And then that we grows to you and your group. You and your home group here. Me and my home group. You and your home group. So you have your 12-stepper, and it grew out a little bit bigger. Then that we becomes you and your group. And then next, it becomes you and AA. Suddenly you realize you're part of something. Don't really know what, where you fit yet. But finally, that three-dimensional we of your 12-stepper and your group and AA as a whole start to include God. So now it's me, and it's God, and it's AA. And I become part of that triangle, that very important triangle that keeps me sober, keeps me connected, keeps me a part of something, keeps me part of the whole. It gives me access to something I didn't even know I needed, right? So the second thing they talk about here is admitted. What does that really mean? That I made a concession, that I made an acknowledgement that there's something going on that I can't handle, that I hit the wall with it. So the admission is important in understanding that step one. The powerlessness. Powerlessness is my inability to produce an effect, right? That absolute feeling of being ineffective. Totally ineffective. Alcohol didn't work anymore in my life. It just didn't work. The more I drank, the more depressed I got. It wasn't connecting anymore. I wasn't feeling a part of the crowd. So the powerlessness was obvious when I was given that that definition of what does powerless mean in my life. And the other thing that we broke it down when I broke it down with my sponsors was my life. My life, my manner of living in human affairs. Oh my God, my manner of living was if I didn't control you, I had to go. Right? Found the exit sign. If it didn't work out according to how I needed it to be comfortable, I had to go. It didn't work out. I mean, I had to take everybody in my life hostage to my way. It didn't work. So that's what my life looked like. And it really was in shambles. Many things were happening. And I won't talk about it here, but they were incomprehensible. The violation of every principle I really had in my heart, gone. All for the quest. All for the quest of alcohol. Alcohol had me. It took more than I could ever imagine. Unmanageable. So unmanageable to me in this step was to not have anything under control or the direction to carry it on. My life had become so unmanageable, it was very reactionary. This happened, I did this. I did this when this happened. It was very unmanageable, to say the least. So what is my problem? When I enter step one, what is my real problem? It was self-indulgence. I had to have things fit me the way it should fit me. Period. So, what is it for you? My step one problem goes back to it was all about me. I had to satisfy self before anything else. Before anything, anybody, I had to make sure I was okay. Somebody would say, well, this is going on. The first thought, how does that affect me? We got to go over here. This is what's necessary. Something with my kids, right? Oh my God, how's it going to affect me? How do you look? How do you feel? It's all about me first. I couldn't believe it until it was pointed out to me that that was the process of my thinking. So what would be the solution for something like that? That position that I held, that frame of reference, perspective that I had on my life. Well, it's surrender and abstinence. Our book says complete abstinence. What's a surrender? Surrender did not feel good to a person like me. I don't come from a place that called for surrender. It called for fight. I come from a place of abuse and neglect that in order to get by in life, I had to protect me. You want me to surrender that? What on earth is going to happen to me? So what does that look like for you? You know, what does it look like when I say to you, does it feel like complete willingness, surrender? Because that's what we need. Complete willingness. Does it feel like you're going to find relief in a power greater than you? This is what surrender is looking for. Does it look like a pure desire to change? Does it look or feel like a deep desire, our book says, to establish and maintain the new order of things, to gain in humility? Does it look like any of that? My answer was no. I don't know what your answer was, but it has grown to that. It has, by going through the steps process, it has grown to that has been my solution the powerlessness. And it is a true gift to be able to come from a perspective of a deep desire to establish and maintain a new order of things. And from a level of humility, not humiliation, of the truth about what alcoholism was in my life the day I came here. I don't do anything without prayer. Nothing starts without prayer, always ends with prayer. And there are lots of prayers in our book. And I would suggest to you that you have your own set of prayers. I always like make my own stuff up, and anyone who knows me know I kind of out of the box with that. So I'm going to tell you my step one prayer, because I was told I had to have a prayer for every step. So dear God, our universal intelligence, whatever you call your God, my name is Karen, and I am in need of your help today. That really comes from page 10 and 12 in the big book. So you can word it any way you want. I need your help to have that complete willingness that they're asking me to have in this step one. I need your help to have a belief in a power, in a God greater than me, and an honest desire and humility to establish and maintain the new order of things. I need your help. I cannot do this alone. And I also need your help to concede that I am an alcoholic. I need your help today. And I am powerless without you. So whatever your prayer might be, I'd suggest you get one. Because when many times I'll be asked, so tell me, I'll ask people I work with, tell me about your first step experience. I can tell you about mine. I can tell you what the powerlessness felt like. I can tell you what I needed in order to feel the power. And they were all outside stuff. And what I discovered here is all an inside job. So what principles? They talk about the spiritual principles, and this is a spiritual step. Do I need to develop in step one so I can move forward in my recovery? So the first principle is honesty. Now, honesty with me, really had to grow. You know, I didn't understand that lying by omission was dishonest. You know, I didn't tell you because I didn't want to deal with you, but I also didn't tell you because I was afraid of what would happen if I did. You know, so I needed to be as honest as I can be, and that has also grown. Honesty, acceptance, having hope that this program works for me like it's working for you, my 12-stepper. Like, I hope that I could have what she had. You know, and the faith in her, it was all in them, in the outside first, before it could possibly be in me. So the operative principle behind step one is honesty. The operative spiritual principle is honesty. If you can't be honest about your scope of your problem, you won't succeed here. And it's a growing scope. You know, you first see it from a lens that looks like this, right? And then it grows out here and becomes deep with you, which is where it needs to go. So how about using this definition of honesty? How about I have now today the absence of the intention to deceive? How about that? Can you try that one on? Well, that worked for me. That was my definition of honesty. Okay, I will try, be very willing not to deceive you. That was how it started. I will try to be willing. And willingness is pretty tricky. Willingness in our book, and it's really outlined in We Agnostics so well, it's a seeking. Honesty, like willingness, is a seeking. I'm just trying to be willing, and you know what? That power greater than me takes over. Because I start to hear you as you start to speak to me. My 12-stepper, my group, the people in my life, they can say things, and I'll hear it from a perspective like, I never thought of it like that before. I'll start to hear it differently than I ever heard before. And it comes from those two spiritual principles, honesty and willingness. So what's the promise? The promise is that I am going to know a new freedom and I am going to have a new happiness. That is going to come my way with this admission and with a we involved in the admission. So what else can you do to make sure that you're practicing this spiritual principle in your life? So there's things that I'm going to ask you that I did to help me understand where my first step really came from, my first step experience. Because you're asked to share this to the next person that comes in here. You got 1 minute sober than them, you got something to share. So the first thing I had to do was I had to make a consequence list as it was related to my behavior. I did this and this happened. I did this and this happened. And I started to see when I did this and this happened, there were big consequences. An example, I was really, really annoyed at my ex-husband. He was an ex then. I had found out that he was cheating on me. So I owned this home. I've owned several homes, but I owned this one particular home. And it was an old schoolhouse. It was absolutely one that we restored. It was absolutely phenomenal. And I found out he was cheating, and I'm going, I know what I'm going to do. And now, I was drinking then. So this is an example of consequence. I was drinking then, and my sister was a real estate agent. So I decided that I would forge my name and sell my house. Put a for sale sign out there so he could see I was serious about this. Sold the house in one day, forged his signature, and then had to tell him. Now, this is how crazy our relationship was. He just looked at me and he said, all right. I'm not kidding. It was so bad what was going on. But I did this and this happened. I sold that house and then I had to move. And I had to go find another house. So I'd buy another house. That was the money pit of my, oh my God. And just the insanity. The disrespect for financial, the securities, insecure. I was so out of control and unmanageable. All I wanted him to see was a for sale sign. And here I ended up disrupting my children's lives, their school. Oh, my God. So the next list she told me to make was a powerlessness list. Now, I thought I was quite powerful. I don't know about you. But I needed to make a list where the drink or the drug or the person or the it had control over me. And I would have to fight to have attention. You know, one of my first addictions was attention. I needed your attention. So I would do anything to get it. I'd compromise anything to get that attention. So I had to make that list, and it was formidable. I started looking at that going, I had no idea. I had given my power to all those things. Then the next was the unmanageability list. Where did I create chaos? Oh. Where did I create destruction? Where did I disturb relationships? Where did I do these things? And it became quite obvious by making these lists that I needed help. And the help had to come from something outside me. I'm really a creative person, and I'm incredibly resourceful. But I couldn't figure my way out of this one. I couldn't figure it out. If I could, I wouldn't be sitting here. I'll tell you that, right? So, the direction that helped me with this gift more than anything else was to attend to my life and no one else's. And that's really hard since I want to just control the universe. I want to be sheriff of the town, you know? And I had to step away and start understanding that, you know what? The people in my life that I was surrounded with also wanted to control me. So, you know, it was a battle to figure this out. So attend to my life and no one else. I had to let others be themselves. In letting others be themselves, guess what happened? I was allowing myself to be me. I'd never done that. I'd been brought up in a family riddled with alcoholism that on the outside the door looked great, but forget about the inside. I'd learned how to wear a mask really well. I grew up in Wisconsin. My parents were both alcoholic. We moved. I was in eight grammar schools, four high schools. We'd move at all times, day or night. There's seven kids. Picked up, moved. We found ourselves acclimating different times. Geographic relocation. Love to say that word. We had each other, but it was crazy. You never knew if you had a winter coat or a summer jacket. Right? Sometimes, you know, you were washing your hair with dish soap and I don't know, it was nuts the way we grew up. But I had to allow them to be them and me to be me, and I didn't know how to do that. But I had an amazing sponsor, and she really helped me. She helped me learn how to make priorities. I didn't know how to do that. So these were the things that this gift of powerless allowed me to hear her. I wasn't stupid. I have a degree. I went to school. I owned a home at the time. I had a bank account, didn't have much money in it, but I still had one. You know, I stopped losing my car, stopped losing my keys, I stopped losing my kids when I stopped drinking. I started to show up, and the gift of powerlessness gave me a presence. So I understood Let others be themselves. I could do that first, and then I was allowed to be me, right? Get out of the centers of everyone else. And then she gave me this instruction. I'll never forget this. Stop taking hostages. I don't take hostages. Who, me? Stop taking hostages. The demands were so great of the stuff that I did to others that it was just amazing. So then she introduces me to step two. Step two was came to believe that a power greater than myself was going to restore me to sanity. And of course we had to take apart this step because I'm all not hearing what's being read. You know, I'm in my head. And I call this step the hope of resurrection. If you're not solid in this step, the ability to recreate your life is going to be questionable. And it says, came to believe. It's important that you hear this word, that a power, not in a power, that a power is going to do this for you. Restore you to sanity. What's sanity? Sanity to me is the truth. I could not differentiate the truth from the lie. We were talking about this earlier in our earlier meeting today. I had trouble. I was operating from a place of delusional truth. I saw the world one way. They talk about it in our book. I saw it one way, and the truth of it, it was really another way. I was driven by me, so I saw things from the perspective of me. And if you're like me, I was driven from a place of less than, a place where I didn't feel I was worth anything, a place of inadequacy, of aloneness, of apartness. So I saw the world from that perspective. I saw you from that, and so anything I saw, I interpreted it from that lie. That's a lie. That's not who I am. Alcoholism brought me to believe that's who I am. And a power greater than me has helped me see the truth of that. So the truth of it is what the truth is, and that was the insanity is all of that. I saw it from that perspective. So I made decisions based on that. Of course they were not going to be anything that was sustainable. They were not going to be anything that was long-term. Those relationships, they had to be hostage. They couldn't be who they were, and that wasn't the truth. So of course they left. They had to leave. It was pretty chaotic, right? So we're going to be restored to the sanity, the truth about me. And that brings in that humility, the truth about me, who I am today. I love who I am, warts and all. It's okay. You know, I did a whole lot of stuff that I'm terribly embarrassed about, but that was then, and that's part of what brings me here to share that with you. But who I am today with God and with the 12 steps of AA, oh my God, I love my life. It is phenomenal. Okay, so there's a two-part question in this. Our book says, where and how are we to find this power? That's what our book says, right? So I'm going to ask you two questions. Do you truly accept the presence of a power greater than you? Do you accept that? The second question, do you believe you have access to that power? That's the second question, two-part question. There are two things that are going to absolutely blow you up with those two questions. And these are our problems for step two. One is defiance. Imagine us being defiant. And one is being obstinate. No, it's this way. I am so defiant. I was 12 years sober before the thought crossed my mind. Maybe I'm a little defiant here. 12 years. So if you're feeling that way, you're on the right place for sure. The other thing that'll stop you from accepting those two questions into your life is an unreasoning, they call it in our book, an unreasoning prejudice. That means no fact opinion. Here's an example. I hate lima beans. Did you ever try them? No, I don't like the color. Well, we ought to try them. No, I'm not gonna like them. Well, our program is kind of the same. You'll be given a suggestion. Have you ever done that? You'll say, well, no. Well, why don't you try it? Nope, it's not gonna work for me. We're the same way. That's called an unreasoning prejudice. We also have it with fear, an unreasonable fear. So we run our life to this point, an unreasonable fears. Fears is just another word for selfish, by the way. Unreasoning. Unreasonable. It's based in feelings, not in facts. This is emotional sobriety. Spiritual principles will help you differentiate the truth from the false. So when you have a situation, you'll be able to make a reasonable decision on it and not be judged or judge, right? So here's where it's asking us the solution. Once again, open-minded willingness. How willing are you willing to be? If you're not willing, just say, okay, this is what I'll sit with somebody for hours so I can get him to say this. Are you willing just to be willing that I'm willing with you being willing? Hey, brother, okay, just be willing. I'm going to ask you, are you willing to be willing? And if the answer is no, and I said, why not? They can't give you an answer. That's an example of an unreasonable prejudice. Unreasonable judgment, unreasonable opinion. So our book gives us some instructions here. What's the solution? Lay aside prejudice. Lay aside everything you think you know. We said it when we started the meeting. Lay aside everything I think I know for a new experience with God, right? Express even a willingness to believe that it might be true for you. That's where I started. Well, okay, I'll give you this. It might be true for me. You're being defiant. Okay, well, whatever. It might be true for me. I'll give you the might be. Because there's something tricky, and once again, outlined in We Agnostics, it's going to tell us over and over again, all you need is willingness. Starts the beginning of that spiritual arch. That spiritual arch, your spiritual experience. It's going to lay it all out for you. It is the coolest thing in the world. All I do is have to be a little bit willing. And I'm not kidding. My shoulders come off my ears. And I can take a deep breath. I'm breathing from here. I can now breathe from here. I get a little bit more willing. You mean that might work for me? Yeah. I'm here to tell you that it will. I wouldn't lie to you. It will. It will for you. Let's take another deep breath together. It'll be willing for you. Can I ask you to earnestly seek this power with me? You may or may not say yes. And I said, you know what? Can you be willing to know that I'm earnestly seeking it for you, with you? Right? So ask yourself what these spiritual terms mean to you that I'm presenting to you tonight. They're so important for you to find that peace and serenity that you've been seeking all along in the spirits of whatever you drank. We were seeking it. We've always been seeking it. So these two steps are asking you to seek something different than you ever did before. So here's my step two prayer, and I'm going to share it with you. God, I'm standing at a turning point right now. Give me your protection and care. Please give me your protection and care. As I abandon myself completely to you, giving up my old ways and my old ideas. In the beginning of How It Works, it said set aside old ideas. The results are nil. Old ideas. Just for today. I had to add that. You can add it. Just for today. Just for today, I can ask God to help me with this turning point I'm at. Just for today, I can say, please help me set this aside to be willing to be willing. Please let me look at things from a different way so I can see the truth about myself. What spiritual principles are at work here? And you don't even know it yet. You might feel a little bit of hope, so hope's there. You might feel faith because you see me that I believe it, and I do. So you might have faith so you get a little taste of faith. You're going to develop trust. I hear it all the time. People walk in the rooms, they'll say, I don't trust anybody. I know. Got to trust God first, and then you'll start trusting. I'm telling you. No, it doesn't work that way. Okay, just stay, hang around a little bit. You're going to find that trust and humility. I'm starting to see. Last week, we had a presenter, and he talked about this very spot, and he used an example of a slinky. You know, I'm up here with this slinky, and I'm down here with this slinky, and I'm up here with this slinky. Until I'm balanced. I'm not balanced yet, but I'm beginning to get a taste of true humility, which is all about the truth. So if I'm going to engage in this course of addiction recovery, if I don't have hope of success, why am I going to try? Right? Why? I wouldn't even try it if I didn't think, if I didn't feel, if I didn't look at it from the perspective of it might work for me. So step two is this hope that it's going to work for me. What's the result? What's the result if you try? Maybe it's possible. Oh my God, stay away from a drink? Oh, that obsession to drink? God did that for us? You mean he can do it on all this other stuff? Yes. The answer is yes. Maybe it's possible. So you failed on your own. I failed on my own. I hit a wall, and it was no way out. I was cornered. No way out. I had to have help. For me, a person like me asking for help, it's still difficult for me to ask for help. It's so much easier for me to give it than to receive it. I don't know what that's about for us, but that's how we are. But if there's no hope, why try, right? The way to instill hope is to realize that recovery is not a question of ability, it's a question of willingness. It's not how good you do it. You don't have to be Mr. and Mrs. AA. You just have to have the desire, right? So, are you convinced of those ABCs they talk about in our book? I hope you know them. I am an alcoholic, and my life has become unmanageable. Are you convinced of that? We have to be convinced of these points. They're very important. That probably no human power could have relieved my alcoholism. Believe me, I tried lots of human powers. Lots and lots and lots and lots of human powers. Your power, their power, his power, any power. None of them relieved my alcoholism. But God could and would if he were sought. God could and would if he were sought. So here's the promise with this step, this hope of resurrection. I'll not regret the past, nor will I wish to shut the door on it. And I am there. I am there. I don't regret my past. My past is my past. And I've learned a whole lot of stuff. It's been very interesting. So our new practice here as we practice step two is going to be allow the solutions to emerge for you. Can't force them. One way or another, can't force it. Quit making a big deal out of ordinary situations. You know how we do that? I had one. I had one working on me today. I love live Christmas trees, right? My daughter's coming and her son's allergic to... she says he is. I don't believe her. She's allergic to a live Christmas tree, so she wants me to get a fake one. And I am cringing. I bought it. It's in my garage. And I just... Why am I making a big deal out of this? I'm going back and forth in my head. Talking to a friend, she's laughing at me. I said, see, it still happens, right? I'm making a big deal. What's the big deal? It'll make Michael Joseph happier. I'm like, oh my God. It's still here. This defiant, arrogant, gotta have my way thought that comes first, not second. Most days it comes second, but Christmas tree, you want me to do this? You know? That's where I was today. So stop overreacting. That's another thing. When I find it coming up, and you do, you find it just, it's starting to rise, it's just like, step back. You just step back. Just step back before you react. It's called the pause. I know we don't talk about it till later on, but I'm telling you, it works here really well, especially with all the family stuff going on right now. Just step back a minute and just go, I'll be right back to you, and leave the room. I literally get up and leave the room. I don't do anything, I come back, and I'm in a much better frame of mind. But my overreacting is not going to do anything. It's just going to start the committee talking. It's going to tell me what a piece of garbage I am. It's going to tell me you should know better. I'll go all into all of my rules that none of them worked anyway, instead of just stopping. Just stop, right? Disengage from the chaos. If chaos is starting, and you're not at the root of it, but somebody in your immediate, it could be work. It could be something else. I mean, my company that I work for just was sold. It's very chaotic right now, right before Christmas. It's nuts. So I'm disengaging from the chaos. I'm just going to see what's going to happen. That's like a new idea. That's an intuitive thought that isn't part of what I would normally think. I would normally be right in there with all the gossip and everything around that. But an intuitive thought came. First was, oh my God. But the second thought was, I think I'm just going to sit back and watch what happens. And I thought, was that my thought? No, it wasn't. It comes from a power greater than me. Because I've gone in partnership with this God. And we'll talk about that next in step three. So how important is it? I sweep away prejudice. It tells us we need to have a new attitude. To sweep away prejudice, think honestly, search diligently. This is the attitude we must have to work forward in the steps. If we don't have these three things drilled into us, oh my God, my sponsor's drilled. New attitude, Kara, what is it? Okay, that's why I can repeat them like that. Sweep away prejudice. Okay, everything I think I know, right? I'm opinionated. We're opinionated. I'll admit it. Think honestly. I can't do that by myself. I don't necessarily think honestly. I come from a perspective that might not necessarily be honest. Can't differentiate the truth from the false yet. Working on it. I agreed I would try to not be dishonest, right? I agreed to be willing to see the truth as it is. I agreed to be accountable and report in about what's going on today. And in my chatter of what's going on today with my sponsors, they identified where I was not thinking honestly, nor searching diligently, and I was leading myself back down that tail of selfish and self-centered. So, you know, sponsors are really important here. Step 3, deciding to be free. This is a decision to be free. Holy crow. Made a decision to turn my will, my thinking, my life, my actions over to the care of God as I understand Him. That's a really big deal, right? Just a decision. We haven't put it into action. We're still talking about ideas, emotions, and actions here. We're not talking about doing anything. It's how I think, how I feel. How I think, how I feel, and my attitude towards them. They all need revolutionizing changes. So here in step 3, I turn my will is everything I want, and my life, everything I want. Right? Everything. How about this? Do you want immediate relief? Do you want immediate relief from what's going on? Or do you want your own ideas, your own conceptions, right here, right now? So what's your decision? From this point on, in step 3, what we want doesn't matter. It's what God wants for us. Our life is really none of our business. It's God's business. When we all say that step 3 prayer, that's what we've asked for. We've gone into partnership. And it's like this, you know, it's like, hey, God says to you, I got a deal for you. We like deals. It's not going to cost you anything either. You'll never be fired. By the way, you'll never be fired, and I will never abandon you. And I promise you this, too. If you ever need help, it'll be there. It'll be there for you. Your side of the deal is to be honest with me, be willing to do what I ask you to do, and I'll support you 100%. Are you in? Are you in? If I say yes, I'm in, you say, that's a good deal. I'm here always. Really hard mentally for me to picture what that would be like, because I never had that experience before I had this relationship with the power. It's a personal relationship, just like this program and the book and your walk through the big book. This beautiful love story is between a God and you, and all it does is it's going to bring you to the center of who you really are. It's a beautiful, beautiful opportunity. So it's none of your business, it's God's business. So what stops me from doing that? Self-sufficiency stopped me. That's the word I can, in a nutshell, acting on my own will, needing it to look like that, for me to be comfortable, forgetting that that comfortability isn't the comfortability that was going to be comfortable. Does that make any sense? So what's the solution? God-dependence. Instead of self-dependence, it's God's. Self-will, God's will. Self-dependence, God-dependence. Let me see. When I was self-dependent, my life kind of looked like that. When I'm God-dependent, my life doesn't have the box it had before. I didn't have to have boundaries and rules and guidelines. Spiritual principles took their place because they are sustainable. They are forever. My rules, man rules, first of all, I can't keep any of my own rules. I don't know about you guys, but I make a rule, I break a rule if it doesn't apply that day. Yeah. If I make a rule for you, there'll be an exception. There's no exception to the spiritual principles. They are what they are. It's not like, you can't be sort of pregnant. Same kind of thing. It's like that with spiritual principles. They are what they are. I'm either honest or I'm not. Right? I either have hope or I'm in despair. It's one or the other. And God's saying, listen, I'm the bridge to help you do it. So God dependence is kind of a scary word for a lot of people. It's kind of like the four-letter words we're not allowed to talk about here. So I'm going to ask you a couple of questions. And I just want you to think about them. What areas of my life have I not given or am I afraid to give to my higher power? Why am I afraid to give them to my higher power? And what do I think God wants me to be? I can tell you the result of what I think my God wants me to be. He wants me to be the best version of me I can be. That's it. That's God's will for me. in my understanding of my partnership with this power, that's what it's evolved into. I just need to be the best version of me I can be. I can't be that way if I'm running on self-sufficiency, because I think of ideas and things that are really not to my best interest for you, because there's a new formula in play here. The formula is God, you, me, and I'm last in that formula, where I always had to be first. When I think of you and I think of God first, my life seems to run a lot more smoothly, a lot more gentler than it ever did before. And I discover that I have gratitude. I discover that I have faith. I discover I'm starting to laugh. Oh my God, I never knew how to do that. That I have courage to walk through things that I never thought I could walk through. I had to wrestle through them or manipulate it so it would turn out the way I think the outcome's supposed to look. None of that is here today. So here's my third step prayer. Kind of different than the one we say all the time. But God, I ask you to be with me, to guide me, and to direct me as I seek your truth. Please help me set aside that was in me that blocks me from the truth of me. Here's what happens an awful lot. You know, I get a lot of phone calls. I work with a lot of people. They'll give me a call, and I'll see the phone number come up on my phone. Here's what I now do. I used to not answer that call. I don't do that. Now I'll do this. Dear God, usually with this tone too, please help me set aside everything I think I know about this person for a new experience with you and her. And guess what happens? I pick up the phone. The call's great. And 9 times out of 10, it was something that that person really needed. And I would have shortchanged that by not showing up. I would have shortchanged that opportunity to be the agent for God I agreed to be. I agreed to be an agent. I agreed to be his daughter. I agreed to help. I can't do it if I'm in the way. So I asked God if I could lay aside my prejudices about what I think I know about this process of this partnership. So far, my partnerships have not been too fruitful. This partnership, amazingly fruitful. This exercise, amazingly fruitful. And the spiritual condition that I feel in is amazing. A peace and a level of contentment that I didn't even know existed. I always sought it, but I just couldn't find it. So we say, God, I offer myself to you to build with me. Build with me, and do with me as you will. Relieve me of the bondage of me, bondage of self. That's all those character defenses, all my grandiose ideas, all of that stuff. I'm asking to be relieved of that to see the truth, right? That I can better do your will. I ask to take away my difficulties. My difficulties are me, by the way. So that victory over them can bear witness of those I can help with your power. I can help. I'm a good helper. I'm a great codependent, so I'm a good helper. But did I ever ask those that I was that codependent for, do they want my help like that? No, I did not. But now with God, it's kind of like you know how to step aside. So what are the principles that you find become part of your life while working the step? I find great faith. I find gratitude. I find trust. I find humility. I find courage, patience. I'm suddenly more tolerant of the world at large than I ever was before. And you get to implement some of these recovery tools in your life because you're not doing it alone. You are never alone. You have asked for spiritual power to be with you always. So sometimes you're having a really crazy day and I said, hey, you asked for it. You're supposed to be sharing that with the power. Where is that in this, right? So it says the promise. The promise is that you're going to comprehend that word serenity, and you're going to know peace at a level you never knew before. And that is huge for people like us. We have always sought that. If you're seeking anything, man, you're going to get that. You're going to get it. How cool is that? So, but got to do some practicing. Let go of outcomes. You're not in charge of the future. You're not a mind reader. You know, the outcome is going to be what it's going to be. We thought we could control that. I thought I could manipulate my way into making sure it was going to be just fine. That's not the way it works. I am responsible simply for the effort. As I often talk to the women I sponsor, I say, we're responsible for setting the table. Hopefully somebody will show up for dinner. Mm-hmm. And keeping that table set And it doesn't matter how they come. It doesn't matter if they've gone out 17 times. You're still welcome back at my table. It doesn't matter. Because you don't know if this is the time that the seed's going to hit and the obsession to drink will leave them. We don't know that. God knows it. We don't. All we can do is be there for them. So you're going to find joy right here, right now. So if you're not finding joy right here, right now, you're missing out on the whole idea of step three and what it can bring to you. So stop worrying about the future and don't worry about fake Christmas trees. So I think that's it for tonight.